Friday, April 10th. The papers can describe it better than I can. Associated Press said, "It was a fantastic, almost unbelievable day around the White House. President Johnson staged a balcony scene from the Truman balcony. He and reporters shouted banner and comments back and forth."
Doug
Kiker of the Herald Tribune said, "It was a spring fever day at the White House yesterday. Consider two press conferences, sort of. A chance for poet Carl Sandburg and his brother-in-law Edward Steichen to hear and see union and management officials negotiate the railroad dispute. A White House balcony scene, and so on. Actually, the morning began early for me with a long, tedious, hard, and almost the last trip to the Elms." That unearthed such things as a 13-year-old picture of me, baby pictures of Linda and Lucy, a key to an apartment we had in 1941 when I was too tired to do any more. I went back to the White House and undressed just in time to meet at 2:30 Carl Sandburg, 85, his little wife, dowdy, sweet, with the gentlest, nicest face I nearly ever saw. Edward Steichen, that famous photographer and patron of Okamoto, and his, amazingly enough, beautiful young wife who seems to me just about 30. Secretary of the Interior Udall and Lee Udall had been escorting them around Washington and brought them to the White House. Before his arrival, I had brought up from the library Carl Sandburg's The War Years and The Prairie Years, The Life of Lincoln, and had read up a bit from Linda Bird's anthology, Chicago, Fog, The People, Yes. He was shaggy-haired, white it was, almost in a Dutch bob, rugged, completely untrammeled in his conversation.
Rather like
Lyndon, I thought. He hadn't heard about the rules, and also a little hard of hearing. Edward Steichen, with that marvelous beard, was much more urbane and sophisticated, but just as childishly happy in the delight of being with his sister and his brother-in-law. Mrs. Sandburg is his sister, and he said of her, "That little sister of mine is an angel if anybody ever was." The four of them simply glowed with the pleasure of being alive and together. We went into the Lincoln Room, and I got Mr. Sandburg to autograph two of the volumes on Lincoln's life, since he is the great master of Lincolniana. I tried to tell him a bit about the furniture and the hand-penned speech of Gettysburg Address, which Lincoln had given to be auctioned off at a charity fair. But really, you couldn't tell him much because he did all the talking. In a minute, Lyndon came in, and they had a time dividing it between them. He looked Lyndon up and down and said solemnly, "You look like you could take care of yourself." When he had smoked a cigar down to the last quarter inch, I offered him an ashtray, hoping to save the floor of the Lincoln Room. But he pulled a little metal gadget out of his pocket, clipped it on to the last end of it, and said, "Oh no, I'm not through yet," and smoked it until there was barely a whiff of smoke left. Various people came and went and got introduced. Linda Bird, I'm delighted to say, got in from school with Warry Lynn, came in, met him, got her poems autographed. Lucy rushed in, more full of her own plans and her own dates than interest in Carl Sandburg. And Mr. Ketchum, the curator, was introduced and was in the back of the room, all ears. As was Liz, you couldn't have separated her from that scene. We went into the East Room and had some delicious tea, and then Lyndon took them all out on the Truman balcony. There they looked down, saw a bunch of reporters in the Rose Garden, and Lyndon began shouting back and forth to them. The first semi-press conference that ever took place from a balcony, I think. From the balcony, we went down into the garden, because Steichen is a great lover of delphinium, raises some rare and beautiful strains, which he had promised to send me, and I wanted him to see the garden. Among Sandburg's delightful remarks were, he said, "My brother-in-law wanted to raise a beard, and he didn't know what sort of beard he wanted, and so he decided he'd copy one after the prophet Isaiah. And another thing he said a couple of times affectionately, did you ever hear of a photographer who had a biographer, meaning himself, because he had done a rather extraordinary biography of Edward Steichen. Our walk through the garden was impeded by about, well, a vast phalanx of photographers who backed up in front of us like retreating troops and did anything but put me at ease. And on the sidelines, a huddle of lady reporters, while I was trying to gently point out the budding crabapple trees, the beautiful promise of the tulips, and the glorious purple grape hyacinths. From there, to my vast amazement, Lyndon ushered us on in to the cabinet room. Lyndon said he wanted Edward Steichen and Carl Sandburg to see some tough men operating, men who could throw 7 million people out of work. They were all the leaders of the railroad industry, prepared to spend the next 14 or 15 days in negotiations to prevent a strike. Well, it was a most unique White House visit, and after we said goodbye to them, and the last and very important word to me was Steichen's request that we get Okamoto back to keep a record of day-to-day pictorial history of White House life, and that I would like so much to have. I thought, what fun, and where else would I encounter such color? The nicest thing of all was a simple family devotion that existed between these people of unusual talent. This evening we were going out, and that's getting to be a rare treat in this house, going to Phyllis and Doug Dillon's house to a dinner in honor of Undersecretary and Mrs. Henry Fowler. He is leaving government for the third time. This is his third hitch in about 3 decades, serving in many departments. When we got to that beautiful house, it was just like entering a door of complete relaxation, because anything that happened there was not my doing. I was just there to have fun, and I did. Lots of good friends were there, from the Hill, Russell Long, the Clinton Andersons, handsome George Smathers and Rosemary, the Hale Boggs, and from our staff, the Larry O'Briens and Walter Jenkins. Walter, everybody loves him, and he gets asked everywhere. And Kay Graham, looking brown and beautiful after weeks in some hot climate vacationing. And Bob and Louise McKinney of New Mexico, our former ambassador to Switzerland. And from the world of business, the sort of people that must have been longtime friends of the Dillons, the Amory Houghtons, Frederick Eatons, the Betchensteins of Owens Corning, Fiberglass, and several other couples. It was a graceful, beautiful evening. Good food, delightful music and dancing, and especially good toast in praise of a man who had given a large slug of his life with small remuneration to his government. He told me the saga. He was sitting on my right, Henry Fowler, and he had first come down back in the Roosevelt days. It's just a case of being found capable, trying to escape, and getting called back. Lyndon's toast I loved. He said, go off and get rich and have a good time for about 90 days. When I left, exhilarated by the evening, I thought how perfectly engineered it had all been, and how capable Phyllis Dillon is. Everything, even sending me the guest list ahead of time. She manages to be both efficient and light, and just the sort of woman Lyndon enjoys being with.